Welcome to the Diary 101 podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandelo Kandepwe, also known as Aka. At least I did not forget my intro today. Yes. So I'm so excited. I'm always excited because the guests are always very special human beings. And this one is special because he's one of my highlights, my stay in South Africa. We had the whole yearly thing, the Range Rover crew, a very cool circle of people that I'll have on this podcast over a long period of time. I don't know. But this one was one person that would always throw a shade. Like, you know, when someone just says, hey, so what do you think? Oh, so you don't want to take personal responsibility. You don't want to do this. And he's my reminder to say, it's not about you, Aka. It's about everything else. It's your business, your own shares, but it's its own person. So I'm really excited about this conversation because I do not know how it's going to go, but it's going to be nice. So, Tabo, how are you doing?
I'm good, Aka. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm a little bit sugar high because it's you. Yes. But I'm great. And it's just so good to have you on the podcast finally and just for us to have this conversation.
No, thank you so much for inviting me. I look forward to it.
You know, one of my favorite things and one of the things I remember the most, because when we were closing, I was kind of emotional somehow. And it's like, now we're saying bye. I see you every day. Now I don't see you every day kind of vibe. And then I remember one time, I stood up and went to ask you to say, what does it mean if I do stuff for my clients, but don't do stuff for my business that enables them to grow? And you just said, you don't like yourself or you don't love yourself, Aka. That's just, do you know how much I use that in business now?
It's very key. I'm going to send you my invoice.
Please and thanks. Why did you say that to me? Like, and why? It's like, it's a different way of thinking. I know you're a coach as well, but I was just like, okay.
Yeah. So I think the reason why I said it that way, it comes from experience, right? And a lot of, in business, a lot of business owners, unfortunately, do not have the luxury and the advantages that someone who is holding a full-time job, has certain benefits that, you know, a business owner does not, like, for example, having a coach, having an HR company, an HR division taking care of them, IT, and, right? So you find that a lot of time, business owners tend to give advice to their clients, but don't necessarily think it's important to implement the exact, advice that they're giving out. And it's a whole psychological thing that says then a lot of people give advice that they want. A lot of people post things for other people, but they're actually just speaking to themselves. And I think from that experience, it's a self-love thing. Running business for me and in my experience working with over 270 SME owners, business owners, you find that, we shift a lot of responsibility and you go through so much trauma that you don't even see that you need to be spending a bit more time on yourself, loving yourself, because you're the owner of the business, you are the managing director, but you're also doing HR, you're also doing legal, you're also doing IT, you're also doing everything that needs to be done, especially in your first couple of months before you pivot. And I think over time, you kind of lose that compassion towards yourself as a human being. And and I think because of, the environment that we're in, we're dealing with a number of entrepreneurs from 13 different countries as well in one room. And as we engage with you as the facilitators and lecturers of the program, we are able to identify, some of the things that are just there. It's not nice that I said, maybe you don't love yourself. But it seems like it hit home, and maybe it rang true for you. I don't know how it felt for you.
In the moment, it was like, oh, okay, Tevo can be mean sometimes. But it also made sense, right? I was putting in so many work hours for so many clients, and I traveled, but my finances weren't showing the amount of time I put in, right? But I'm like, I'm always working. Like, I'm always working, always doing this. Why isn't that it's not showing, right? And then I read the 0 to 1, the lean guy. I've forgotten his name. And he said that you can give value, but you might not be of value.
Oof.
So you, yes, and you, and that's like one of my favorite thing in that book. And you telling me you don't love yourself made me start thinking differently in even how I talk to people and even how I renegotiate with my clients. Like right now, I'm very set on a lot of stuff. I was like, I don't have to be aggressive. Like I have to be aggressive in certain things, right? But I can still be gentle, kind, and everything, but still put my boundaries and set my limits. And you'd be
Because,
surprised how now I'm just
hold
like,
yourself accountable, right? And that's
yes.
the big part of loving yourself, is making sure that you call yourself out when you are deviating from the goals that you've set for yourself, the strategies to get to those goals, and the milestones that you've kind of created for yourself. And a lot of time, as business owners, especially us who are in advisory, we or in consulting, we tend to over advise than we actually apply, because we still have to deal with that paradox of, I'm 100% shareholder in this business, and we are not able to separate between the two personalities, because from a legal standpoint, the business is a different person to you, and is responsible for its own taxes and its own affairs, and so are you. So it becomes very important that, in the journey, we are able to see that way, to see the two as different, but also to be able to see what are some of the things that need to be done. So when you see a problem, let's say, for example, someone says, I'm speaking to a business owner, and a lot of business owners like using the word I. I do this, but that's not what you do. It's what the business does. You just happen to be an employee of the business, and you are number one in the business. So from a coaching perspective, it becomes very important that, we create a safe space for you. So I'm going to try and define coaching as quickly as I can. A lot of people, when you tell them about coaching, they think about, voice coaching, soccer, da da da, where they believe the coach tells you what to do. Whereas, executive and business coaching, we don't necessarily tell you what to do, but we just create a safe space for you as a business owner or as an executive leading teams, right? To be able to self-reflect by asking powerful questions, right? And in doing that, we allow you to have the opportunity to self-reflect. So a lot of the conversations, so I hang out with different entrepreneurs every day for
Of
an
course
hour.
you do.
You would know, there's a link, you go to my calendar, you book a slot that's available, and we use systems, and in that conversation, our job is just to facilitate the conversation with yourself, because it can get so lonely when you're a business owner. You don't have people to really talk to about your business. You can speak to your spouse, you can speak to your family, but it's not the same, because also you've got that. You want someone who can be objective and ask you the difficult questions, and also make you be able to identify the difficulties. I mean, I don't think as a business executive, I was paid on this program to kind of facilitate, but also assist, use my skills as an executive coach, as an accountant, to be able to assist the guys who are in the cohort, the business owners that are in the cohort, to be a bit more mindful about some of the pitfalls that some of the pitfalls that could lead to your business not succeeding. And a lot of the times when you see something like that, that's why I have to be direct to say, from what I'm seeing, it's because we were having it was a casual conversation, but I think from it, there's a lot that you can extract as a business owner and self-reflect. And I think we continued with that conversation to say, what do I mean by, loving yourself, and how do you show that as a business owner? So whatever's happening in your personal, a lot of the times will affect how you run the business and your attitude, towards business and success. So yeah.
That's so deep. And what I took from it was also self taking responsibility, knowing the role you played in a specific situation, and always like the separating of the business and myself, right? Because I'm the only first employee in the business, it means everything that happens in the business revolves around me. It's accepting that in the moment and planning on how I can remove myself and have other people play different aspects so that if I need a break for a week, it can happen without damaging the business. It's all I needed. It's one thing. I base a lot of that. Like, do I like myself? Do I like my business? It's very interesting to just see how the South African trip changed how I look at life now. Because, yeah, apart from us being the we're the coolest anyway, so yeah.
You guys are the Range Rover crew. I
For
think
a
because
reason.
we had three cohorts, the guys who were in the business track would say, we were the best. The guys that are in civic engagement or civic leadership will also believe they're the best. And then the guys that are in public finance are the best. And I think that's why, as Africa, within Africa, we need capacity building initiatives such as the Young African Leaders Initiatives to, one, exchange ideas, but also to be, in a space where we recognize young talent, where we can plant seeds and they can go back to their countries and then, scale the operations and scale their businesses, create jobs. And by creating jobs, there's a lot of societal needs that we are solving. I'll just give you a small example. By creating a job, there are a number of United Nations Sustainable Development Goals that you will be, you will be meeting, no poverty, zero hunger, decent workplace. Gender equality is also one of them, because especially when we create jobs, we always want to make sure that there's that diversity and inclusion and a balance between, different sets of diversity criteria that we look at. So it's very key then, therefore, as a business owner, that when you look at your small business, and you look at it growing, the focus be on job creation. Because in Africa, again, from a skills development perspective and capacity building, those are that job creation or unemployment in South African employment is sitting at 32%, if I'm not mistaken. So, as you can imagine, and it's higher amongst the youth, and a lot of our youth are very educated because our education system, they're allowed to go through for school, through sponsored by the government, through scholarships and through bursaries and loans. So I think it's very important then, therefore, that we focus on job creation, and everybody's role in job creation then becomes important. Me and you are accountants, right? And oftentimes we don't see how accounting can contribute to creating jobs. Right. And I want to give you an example of something that happened during COVID, that COVID taught us. So in South Africa, when COVID hit, we had the lockdown, a lot of small businesses were shutting down. And then the private sector got together with the government to avail over 200 billion rands in loans and opportunities for small businesses so that they can stay afloat. And you would expect that we would. Small businesses will apply and will finish that money very quickly. It is still not finished to this day. Why? Because the companies are not funding ready. right? They don't have the right financial reports. They don't have the right compliances that are required by the banks, and they don't even have accountants. And it exposed us as South African accountants, for example. It exposed how we probably are the largest cohort of accountants across Africa. However, if we are unable to support our SMEs, our focus has just been on big business. Our focus has been on big NGOs, and we've been neglecting, the young and upcoming entrepreneurs like yourselves and everyone who was there for the YALI and for every other program that was there. So I think once and because those businesses were unable to attract capital into their businesses, they couldn't then absorb a lot of people. They had to let a lot of people go. A lot of them shut down, and that reverses the gains that the country has made in trying to push for economic development. And economic development comes with, socioeconomic development as well. So some of the social issues that we are facing due to, lack of money and opportunities. So there's a huge link there that I think, and we've used accountants as an example, engineers as well. Engineers can create a lot of jobs because there's a lot of, solutions that may be out there. The guys in the legal fraternity can also contribute to policy. They can also contribute to law and so on, so that it is pro local, local production. It is pro local job creation. It is pro local businesses and local NGOs, so that we can have sustainability even when the foreign direct investment leaves the country. We are able to still be sustainable, have the jobs, have the roads, have the infrastructure, and have the capable skills to continue with the country. So I hope that, in a nutshell, that kind of also covers, why we do what we do as a consulting and an advisory firm.
I have a lot of things I'd like to pick on. I'd like to take you back. You were in YALI. You did the US one, right?
Yes, Mandela Washington Fellowship 2019.
Fancy. I was like, you? He did the fancy one.
Yeah.
And he did like the regional one. I just want to know, how was your experience?
So my experience was crazy. So background. So there's three tracks similar to you guys. So it's the guys that are in business and the guys that are doing, NGOs and nonprofits, and then there's the guys that are in public service. And because I'm a chartered accountant and I've got a lot of background in business, that's all I've been doing. I realized when we started the company about 8 years in 2016, 8 years ago, the experience that I have was more on the public sector. I also have a lot of experience as a lecturer. Then I've got experience as, in the private sector, running a firm. Blah, blah, blah. I didn't have a lot of experience working with NGOs. Or on the civic organization space. As we were identifying, as you know, the more I read up on stuff, I realize how we are not organized. There's a quote, I think it's Martin Luther King, who says, "We are not outnumbered, we are just out organized." Right? So I felt a very strong sense of how do we support the non governmental organizations, because they're an economy on their own, but they also focus on social issues that I care about as a person. So I applied for the Mandela Washington Fellowship to do that, and it was such an amazing experience to see how business in America. So we spent 6 weeks at the business school learning how to build, civic organizations and to build leadership. So using all the other skills that I had, I was building up on that to see how are the Americans using their model. So private sector gets together with the nonprofit, and they make an impact. So learning the different business models that the different MOUs that they get into in America, and how they're able to drive transformation or transform their cities and towns and and stuff and villages through those models has been quite inspiring. And I think some of the biggest things that I've learned, we were able to come back into Africa, and we run an incubator for NGOs, so we've been involved in the creation and acceleration of a number of nonprofits that are very high, very scalable. And using those skills, we were able to, to implement those strategies, to advise, again, pro bono, to prepare reports and sit with the boards, and assist them in decision making and show them how, things can be done. So, fun fact, one of the most inspiring thing that summarizes everything was seeing we were in a city that is has got 100,000 people, but they had pledged to donate 2 million hours to community service. And which meant that even when we lived in Lincoln, Nebraska, every Friday we had to take an hour to go serve in the community. And that's kind of the culture that they've built. So you find that there's not an over-reliance on the government. When we were there was a storm, and there was a lot of havoc. And when the government wanted to come in and assist, the residents were like, "No, we've got this. If we fail, we're gonna call you. If we need you, but leave everything to us, we'll be able to handle it." So for me, that was when I look at the African Union, the Africa we want in 2063, that's exactly where the kind of community that I think we should be building in Africa. And it's really inspired me to even come back and do more. And as a firm, it also gave us direction in terms of a lot of firms are going this direction. We can have our own direction in terms of how, we run the business, and it's been, I would say it's very successful.
I think that's like one of the reasons why, if I would intern for a company, I'd like to intern in America for like a venture capital business because I love the tools and systems they have and the culture. Those people work, like they work. It's like.
They do. Yeah, they've perfected the system. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, they've had over 200 years to practice this,
Yes, true.
whereas in the case of South Africa, our democracy is very new. We've only had 30 years to do a lot of things, so it's good to learn from them. And I think I like the fact that we are able to exchange across countries. So you would also notice how some of those learnings and some of those approaches, we were using them in class, where you guys came from 13 different countries with different contexts and different legal frameworks and stuff. And we were also just trying to make sure that each country can share what are some of the opportunities, da, 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 so that when you go back to your country, you can be able to have high level engagements with some of the policymakers to say, in Swaziland, they've got this thing. We think, what do you think? Do you think it's going to work in Zambia? Madagascar says this, and everybody goes back, and they're able to engage with high level people, and see how they can bring in positive change in their countries. But all of those changes will also affect their businesses and create a fertile ground for their businesses and for everyone else in the industry to then thrive and grow, and therefore creating more jobs.
You always liked talking about how you as an individual might not like your government, but your business should be in love with the government. Like, what do you mean by that?
So a lot of people have personal issues with their government, right? And I'll use America as an example. So we went into a red state. So this was during the Donald Trump presidency. So we went into a Donald Trump state, the state of Nebraska. And the city is a blue state, which is, not really. But after the elections are done, we still need to work, and we still need to work with each other, right? So whatever our personal feelings are about our government, a business does not have feelings because it's a juristic person, right? So by design, it shouldn't have feelings. So if you don't separate the two and you believe you are the business, you will fall into the trap of your feelings about your government will affect how your business does. Because now you may not want to do business with a government that's led by this president that you don't like. And the laws of business are such that private sector needs to work with the public sector, needs to work with the NGO sector, right? And through that economy, whether we agree or we don't agree, we must focus on the commonality and what are the things that bring us together, job creation, infrastructure, you know, keeping the lights on, having water, having health services, education, da, 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 da. So from a business perspective, a business can never survive without a government. It can never survive without the NGO sector. And therefore, as a result, a business must be proudly South African, proudly Zambian, proudly Madagasi, and so on and so forth, as a juristic person. And should the business owners have concerns with the leadership of the country politically, you can address those just formally through the structures and what your constitution allows you to do. But there's a big trap there of letting our personal feelings dictate and limit how we do business.
That's so interesting. And it's like a really, you're the first person that ever said that to me. And just the team, we're just like, okay. Now I hear stuff about the government in Zambia, and I'm keeping my mouth shut because I'm like, I'm a business person. As an individual, yes. As a
as
business
an individual and as a party member, as an individual, you may belong to a party. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, but as a business,
but as a business, you are not the business. You are just a business. An employee in the business, and therefore the business can never have an attitude where it operates against the government. It doesn't make financial sense at all.
Yeah, it never makes so much financial sense. So after America, what, like, I know the funny thing is you went to for the YALI when you already started your business, but you're an accountant and you went to become a business owner and you're now doing all this cool stuff. So what changed for you to pivot to being an employee to being an employer?
Very simple. So it also answers the question of how I became a coach, right?
Ooh.
So when I was in university, I volunteered a lot for math and science camps, you know, to go to high school and assist high school scholars, you know, learners with math and science. And that was because when I was in grade 11, I was failing accounting, math, and maths. I wasn't doing very great at those. And I went to a camp for a week, and that camp changed my life. It improved my maths, it improved my English, it improved my accounting. And those were the three subjects we were doing. And so much so that in my matric year, I got A's in those three subjects. Or I got a B in maths, but anyway. So I've been involved in, you know, high school camps. And then when I finished my, and then as I was doing my second year, I then became an academic mentor at school, you know, tutoring, but also being a mentor to the first years. And as I progressed with my career, I've always been involved for over 18 years now in this. So even the place where I worked, I was responsible for 1,200 graduates. And the company had about 3,000 employees as well. So I was in the learning and development unit, meaning our responsibility was to create learning content and make sure there's learning that happens theoretically, but also on the job, so that the product that we produce as auditors for the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa is of the highest quality, right? And as you're doing that, I mean, 1,200 graduates, and then they do a three-year program. In the fourth year, a lot of them are now going into industry and they're becoming managers and they become senior managers. And I realized that there is not a lot of continuity because now they are out in the world, the market is rejecting them. They don't have a lot of learning and development opportunities. So for me, similar to every good series, you know, season one was done and I needed to go into season two, where now those graduates, actually season four now, because, you know, some, we started at high school, then we went to university, then we went into them, the graduate development, and now we're going into the management development. So it became very important that, because I was still getting calls, you know, we used to get 400 new graduates every year. And once they left the system, they are supposed to be ready to lead as managers. And I was getting a lot of calls, you know, we need assistance with this. I need coaching. I need mentorship. I need, and you know, the pivot then just became, starting a firm was just one of those things that then said, let's continue on this journey we have built here. We've got solid systems, we've got solid programs that I believe the organization can take forward. But for my own career growth, I will go do management development. And we did that for the first 3 years. We developed a lot of managers. And then internally, we started having management development programs. And I think what we were presenting at YALI are snippets from that management development program. And a lot of them, I mean, 8 years later, so 8 years ago, we started the firm. 8 years later, some of those guys that were managers are now executive CFOs. Some are entering managing director or directorships or CEO positions, and they still need that service. So for us, we're very passionate about leadership development. We're very passionate about SMME development as well. Excuse me. Yeah. So those were the things that encouraged us to encourage me to actually leave employment. And you know, jump into this. And to date, like I said, we've worked with over 270 SMMEs. And it's been beautiful, you know, again, using the same experience and just continuing to build on what was started.
And your goal is to actually work with 1 million SMEs, right?
The goal is to work with 1 million SMEs. We still have a debate about whether in 2030 we want 10,000 or 100,000. And we are reviewing that strategy, you know, for a number of reasons. If you chase a big number, what we have seen with our competitors is that they chase the numbers and not so much the impact. So yes, you know, you might want to work with 1 million small, medium companies, but you know, you're not very invested, and also our programming is very different, because our programming is very heavy on the executive coaching and development. So what we normally do is we run cohort-based programs, where we would have, right now we're dealing with about 50 young youth-owned businesses in South Africa that's sponsored by a bank. And what we then do is we give them group coaching sessions, which is similar to a lecture or facilitation program. But then we also give them one-on-one time where each entrepreneur gets to sit for an hour with a qualified coach or a qualified mentor, and we are able to create that space for them to be able to self-reflect. These are my goals. These are the strategies. These are the milestones. Yes, I met this milestone, so what's next? Or maybe I didn't meet this milestone. These are the things that led to it not being met. And quite interestingly, in our programs, how we've designed them is we're not just looking at the business, we're also looking at the business owner as a leader, because a lot of the time we focus on, you know, assisting in developing the business. But if you are not a good leader, you can never run a successful business. So there's that link as well.
Do you know why I love you, to be honest? Is I saw you speak and I was like, when I grew up, I just want to be like that man speaking there.
You are an accountant.
Yes, because you're an accountant, and I'm an accountant, and I'm like, oh, so I can actually do this, and people at home are telling me it's not possible, and I met somebody who's actually doing it, and maybe it's different. You've got the experience. I'm just jumping in deep because I'm a GP, and we take risks.
You'll be so shocked how much experience you have, right? So, and I think in one of the sessions I was talking about, there's a book called Competence Redefined.
Oh, I need
And
to read that.
yeah, so, and this lady focuses on, redefined competence using the acronym BEEKS, which is behavior, experience, your attitude, your knowledge, and your skills. And a big part of what I think is important is that experience, right? So as an accountant, the accounting syllabus is set up in such a way that they give you real businesses. They give you within your study from high school, when you look at those scenarios, if you go back, you'll realize that, oh, this is actually a tuck shop. Oh, here we're actually talking about ShopRite. Oh, here we're actually talking about, a network provider and stuff. So accounting gives you real life business problems that you've been solving. So by getting an undergraduate degree, you're already able to solve a lot of business problems. But we don't have that mindfulness to we're not mindful enough for us to identify that, oh, I actually have such a skill and I'm able to translate it. And I think that's why even our coaching programs for accountants works on that, the mindfulness of what is the impact that you are making there. So a lot of the times it could be that. And also, this is why we have these programs. And that's why on these programs, your facilitators have to be people that have experience, that have lived experience and are able to share. So if I'm lecturing you and I'm just giving you theory, it makes no sense. But if I tell you, oh yeah, we went 3 months without any cash flow because, a client didn't want to pay, and that's very relatable. And as a lecturer, you can trust me to be able to provide you with proper guidance. You get what I'm saying? So yeah, so there's that. So you are still, I think the program is just unlocking some of the blind spots. It's just making you aware that, this and that might be a blind spot to the growth of your business. So you should be proud of yourself that you went through it, and then you should be proud that you were able to look into the future and almost kind of define a vision for your own company or redefine your vision for your own company. And then I think what's important is understanding that not everybody's going to understand your vision, because a vision is like a dream, right? You dreamt this thing last night, and anything can happen in a dream, and you're trying to explain it to me. I mean, you felt the emotions that you were feeling, you felt whatever you were feeling. I won't always understand. And you just want to focus on releasing your plans and your conversations with people just a bit by bit, to say, we might be we're working on 1, 2, 3 and to get it. And a lot of times, I want to use this example, very stupid one. A village back in the 70s, and one of the villagers gets a scholarship to go to the US. The village, puts money together. You know how we do it in the village. The village came together, put in money. The one who had a car or a bicycle, took him to the airport, goes to New York, comes back, and is so inspired. He's experienced New York, and now he goes to this village and wants to explain to them that this village is going to look like New York one day. And everybody's like, oh, that's a cool story, but they don't know what New York is like. They don't have that lived experience. Therefore, it becomes easier for someone like that to become depressed, right? Because they're such a big dreamer. But what differentiates a good leader from another is to then identify that the reason why certain people might not believe in you is because they haven't seen what you have seen. And you just want to make sure that as you walk the journey, you don't reveal all your cards. It's like playing poker. Not everybody needs to know the cards that you are playing. You need to be focusing on engaging at your level. You are a Yali. You need to be belonging to the Yali community. And when you belong in the Yali community, you're going to find like-minded people that 5 years ago were on the same program as you and have made some progress. And these are the people that you can then, you know, create a community with and belong to that community with and be able to go forward and implement some of the things that, you know, when you guys were in class together, you kind of shared and stuff. Yeah.
Ooh, you've just been dropping gems, gems, shade, James. It depends. All right, Tabo, what's your favorite childhood memory?
Ooh, my favorite childhood memory was making money, right? And I'll explain why. So when I... So we grew up, our mom had a stall at one of the busy intersections, and she, you know, would sell tomatoes, onions, da, 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 right? And just watching how we would go into the market, get a sack of potatoes or onions, and then repackage them into smaller quantities, and people would actually give us more money than we bought that pack for. It was kind of mind-blowing, you know. One of my uncles had a scrapyard as well, you know, and was doing spray painting. So if cars got into an accident, the insurance companies would bring the cars through. So, you know, during school holidays and after school, I'd go do works on, works off, you know, and get experience. My neighbor was an electrician. And during school holidays, I'd work with him, you know, electrifying. When we got into the new government, you know, in the early 2000s, they were electrifying our areas and stuff. So there was a lot of work and learning how to do that and making money and being able to buy meat for the family. Because I come from a very large family. I'm an uncle of 21 now. My mother has 24 grandchildren and 7 kids. So being able to provide for the family for me as a young man was always just that highlight for me. So that's always my favorite memory, and how my sisters and I would divide, you know, the villages and the townships, and would go street by street with a basket full of tomatoes, onions, and all the stuff that we know people would be buying, and then coming home. And although, you know, we didn't want to compete, we were competing who brought the most money, and seeing what that money can do, and, you know, the need to expand our family empire. So for me, that was my favorite thing.
Do you remember all your nieces and nephews' names? 21 is a lot.
Yeah, no, all of them. 21 is not a lot. You'd be shocked.
Well, my uncles should be grateful. Well, not a lot. Eh? Yeah. I'm going to say, you guys need to listen to this. You don't have a lot of nieces. They don't.
Remember how it is, right? One of them, so like my oldest brother just came from his house now, so I would engage my nephews and nieces, 5 of them at a time, you know. And we are very tight family, so we know each other's birthdays, we celebrate birthdays, da, 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 da. And our philosophy in the family is it's easy to solve societal and world problems, but it's easier to make sure that the family unit is okay, you know, so that we solve the issues that are in the world in our family, because the world is too big.
Yeah. This also sounds like something you do in your business. You know how you always say, love yourself. So it's starting at home, make your house in order before you go outside and start telling them what to do with their lives. Because how do you preach something you don't do at home?
100%. And also clients are very particular and very observant, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to be running an advisory firm and you are not implementing the advice, they will be able to pick that up. You know, why does this accounting firm want to work with us and assist us to pivot when they themselves have not pivoted?
Okay, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
So we're coming to the end of the podcast. No, don't go. So Tavo, you can ask me a question.
So What inspired you to go into private business?
It's the easiest. My grandparents, like you, we're an extended family, so I was raised by my grandparents. No, but I was the youngest. Says a lot, right? But I'm not the last born. I was just treated like one, the youngest. And what happened was my grandparents were supporting a lot. So they were their givers. So they had nieces, nephews from their brothers and sisters. So it was such a big house with so many people in it. And that's why I'm so close to my family. And yeah, it's like I don't know how they did it. I don't know how they supported everybody to go to school. But they also had a lot of businesses. We used to do different gigs depending on the weather and season. If it's a traditional ceremony, we're going to sell what is needed at that traditional ceremony. We're going to sell drinks. If I'm having sports day at school, means we're going to cook, we're going to sell drinks, we're going to sell snacks. If you're having like Zambian Day or Independence Day, you also go to the stadium, you sell snacks. So, yeah. So it was a lot of that growing up. It was annoying because your friends are having fancy time. You have to be at a stand selling something.
I completely understand that.
So yeah, I was always selling something, and I also like money. So my grandfather also used to provide for me, I would say in a different way, because I like fancy stuff, I like money. But when I was done with high school, he told me to say, well, you're not a big girl, find a job. Because I also did a lot of volunteer work. Like, find a job somewhere, start earning your own money. Then when I started a job, I was like, in 9 months, because it was just contract based, in 9 months, I am not going to have this job. How am I going to have money? I don't like asking for money. It feels like I'm begging. So I was like, oh, let me ask one of my facilitators what business they're in. So that's how I started my first business, selling cosmetics. Because I knew in 9 months I wouldn't have a job that's giving me extra money. So
Hustle.
yeah, I started a side hustle. Then I moved to Lusaka. Then the side hustle grew. Yeah, I've just been in, I like the private sector. You set your own rules. You really have to be disciplined. You really have to have self-control. And there's a lot of delayed gratification. It's really,
100%.
people might think it's easier,
It's
but
focused
yeah,
time.
there's focus time because you know if I don't do this, I don't get paid. I like that. And there's so much growth and there's so much options. So I get to have the options to travel or not, to work or not. So if I want
I
to
got
travel, I don't have to ask my employer that I need to travel. I know this is good for me in this industry and this is where I'm going. I can always pack up my bags, tell my family I'm leaving, and I'll see them later and go. So yeah, and also because I am more on the adventurous side, I would be bored.
Got
In
you.
the yeah, I would be bored. So I like exploring, and because I'm in my 20s, I want to have a lot of exploring and traveling, and that I can't afford, but there's so many opportunities out there that give me that option to travel.
There's a lot of
So
funded programs.
yes, a
So
lot of funded programs.
just something that we touched on briefly when you were in South Africa, right? In terms of growth, right? I'm reading a lot of papers in terms of how accountants can contribute to the achievement of the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And I think one of the things that comes up a lot is that we work with what we call enterprise supply development programs with multinationals, right? So we have partnered with, we're an implementing agent for Anglo American Platinum, which is a mining company in South Africa.
Yeah,
And
heard of
basically
it.
what we've
Yeah.
been, yeah, so what we've basically been doing is the mine is, mines are usually based in villages, and they need to be empowering small businesses in those villages socially, da, 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 da. So we would come in as experts in the field and as capacity building champions because of the history that I've just, highlighted to you. And we would work with the villagers and the business owners in the village. We've worked with about 74 with Anglo, and we would provide the accounting back office support. We'd provide, the HR company would assist them with, bringing in the right talent, da, da, da. And then from an executive coaching perspective, the villagers get an opportunity to sit with an accountant who sits across the room and, gives them, creates a safe space for them to reflect as a business owner and to using, positive psychology to get them from where they are to the next level. So I think it is something that South Africa is leading on in terms of in the continent. And I hope that every country can draw from this model and make sure that as accountants, we are able to contribute to the development of our townships, to the development of our towns, our cities, and our villages that way. And we've seen tremendous results. And I think it's something that, you could assist in growing your consultancy as well as you continue as an accounting professional. There's definitely a lot of scope there.
There is definitely a lot of scope there. And for you specifically, you have so much that you say, Aka, you need to do this and this and this. And just hearing you speak is like, oh, I didn't do half of the stuff that was asked me to do. But no shame there.
Maybe we should onboard you in one of our programs, because what we also do, look, it's a very common problem, right?
Yeah, it is.
So what we do is we use what we call Coach in the Corner. And that software allows us to be able to work with you. And as you are speaking, capture the goals, capture the strategies and milestones. And they've got dates. You give yourself dates. This week, this is what I want to achieve. So we call this our accountability partner program. So we become your accountability partner to make sure that you achieve the goals that you want to achieve. So typically when our clients are having such issues, by using the system, in every meeting, oh, you achieved this goal. Okay, cool. How did you do it? Where are you now? What are you going to be doing next? And then now there's a new milestone. Then there's a new milestone. There's a new milestone. For those that you didn't meet the goals, again, what are you? What didn't work? How can you do it differently? And stuff like that. So we all need an accountability partner that can assist us and walk the journey with us. And I think quite something that as we continue our talks as well, let's see how we can collaborate cross-country and open up opportunities.
I really can't wait for that. And I'm scheduling that conversation in your calendar.
No worries. You have my calendar. Yeah.
I do have your calendar. And you did highlight, talking about something I love so much and very passionate about is mentorship. Because we don't practice that so much in our country. I have mentors. But we don't practice that so much in Africa and mostly in Zambia as well. It's a new concept. Could you just give me some nuggets and tips for anybody listening concerning mentorship?
Look, I think the long and short of it is that, mentorship is about someone who's a bit more experienced and has done the thing that you want to do. And you go to them to kind of get tips and also just reflect, I've tried this, it's working, it's not working, da, da, da. So you want to find someone who's a senior accountant and has done what you wanted to do and they become your mentor. And then a coach on the other hand is someone that you are able to, now as you are embarking on that journey and what your mentor has kind of shared with you from a strategic perspective, with the coach is the how. It's the, are you really doing it? It's the, I don't feel like doing it today, and the coach is just there to say, show up to practice. You said you wanted to score 100 goals. What I'm observing is that you've only scored 20. Where the other 80 goals, what's your plan? Da, 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 da. So the coach, that ecosystem works where you've got a mentor, then you've got a coach. And then the third element is a sponsor. So in this instance, your sponsor was Yali. Right, it sponsored you to be able to be on this program. It opens up opportunities for you, so you continually just want to build on that. What I'll do is I'm going to send you a link to Coaches and Mentors South Africa. That's the organization I belong to as a registered coach, and then you can understand the difference and how we can use them to get yourself ahead.
Talking to you every single time makes me look forward to something, honestly. And yeah,
You always
I'm
get homework.
I always get homework. I'm already typing and saying homework for my
Yeah,
next session.
you always get homework. So I've sent you on WhatsApp the link to Coaches and Mentors South Africa. They're able to give you enough detail in terms of what is coaching, what is mentorship. Just on the homepage, you're going to get that. And I hope that it kind of drives, something, even from a consulting perspective, as a consultant, and you want to be a leading consultant, what kind of opportunities you can unearth for your business in your country.
Yeah, I, and that's the thing I love about you, Tavo, is a conversation with you is always personalized. You're such a
Yes,
good
it's a training,
and
the
I hope,
training.
yeah, I know, and I hope when people listen to this podcast, they can personalize it as well, because I know a lot of things have been about you, Aka, and this, but yeah, guys, I hope you can just personalize it and get some nuggets, and because it's been such a great conversation, like
Yeah.
always. So yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for inviting me. Looking for, and I'm wishing you all the best. I think you are brave in starting a podcast as well.
Before you go,
And we need more of this. Yeah.
what do you look forward to?
Look, I look forward to working with, so a lot of the programs we've been implementing, we were implementing on behalf of, as a
Yeah.
subcontractor, and what I'm looking forward to is now rolling out programs, taking all of that experience and having our own flavor in terms of what we do, because we are a very unique business, and running our own cohorts. I'm also looking forward to hosting some of the programs that are hosted in the US. We've got very, very, excuse me, very, very competitive business schools in South Africa that, when you look at some of the universities where people are taken to do their leadership development, in terms of world rankings, we've got South African universities that are higher than some of those American universities. So I'm looking forward to a future where a lot of these programs are run in country, so that we can also have that diversity of, okay, yes, we can see New York is New York, but here's Sandton, here is Lagos, here is, here's Kampala, here are all the African cities that have actually done it as well, and go back and implement that. I'm looking forward to a future where you guys as alumni are able to work with each other to be able to amplify the impact that you would otherwise have if you just on your own. So yeah.
Great, Tavo. Thank you so much for showing up as always and just always having me in your life and tolerating me because I'm not going anywhere. But yeah, this was such an amazing conversation. I hope people can pick up the wealth of experience and the nuggets. And yeah, I look forward to working more with you and just learning because there's so much I'm
100.
willing to learn and hope you can learn more from me as well.
Likewise, thank you so much, and continue doing what you're doing. Looking forward to it.
All right, thank you. So, guys, that's the end of our episode. I hope you liked it. I hope if you want to learn more about Tavo and what he does, we're going to share all his info in our bio. And I hope you share this with a friend because these are beautiful nuggets. And subscribe, follow all our channels. Thank you. Bye.